All right, we're going to go ahead and get started here with our next lesson in our Visions of God series. We're in the book of Daniel. Last time we covered the first two chapters of Daniel, and Daniel has an awful lot of dreams and visions in it. It also has a couple of chapters that are not specifically visions or dreams. But given that almost all the book is, I figured that I would at least read the chapters and we'd briefly discuss the other pieces that weren't. Because it's a great opportunity to study the book of Daniel, and it's not going to take a lot of our time. So today we're going to start in chapter 3 of Daniel. And we're going to... Miss Leith is probably cringing there in her seat. We are going to read through chapter 3 and briefly comment about it. So if you would read along with me. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits and its width 6 cubits, and he set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. And King Nebuchadnezzar sent word to gather together the satraps, administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So the satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered together for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then a herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, that you fall down and worship the gold image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace." So at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the horn, flute, harp, and lyre, in symphony with all kinds of music, all the peoples, nations, and languages fell down and worshipped the gold image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Therefore at that time certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews. They spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast in the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up? Now, if you are ready at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the image which I have made, good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and an expression on his face changed toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated. And he commanded certain mighty men of valor who were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their other garments, and were cast in the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he rose in haste and spoke, saying to his counselors, "Did we not cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire?" And they answered and said to the king, "True, O king." "Look," he answered, "I see 4 men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and of the form of the 4th is like the Son of God." Then Nebuchadnezzar went near the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spoke, saying, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here. When Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came from the midst of the fire, they came from the midst of the fire, and the satraps, administrators, governors, and king's counselors gathered together, and they saw these men on whose body the fire had no power. The hair of their head was not singed, nor was their garment affected, or the smell of fire was not on them. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him. And they have frustrated the king's word and yielded their bodies, that they should not serve nor worship any god except their own god. Therefore I make a decree that any people, nation, or language which speaks anything amiss of the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made an ash heap, because there is no other god who can deliver like this." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Okay, so there's the story. So what strikes you about the story?
They didn't get burnt up.
Yeah. Not only that, it says their hair wasn't even singed. Right? I mean, I don't know how many of you have ever, especially you men, if you've ever worked, you know, when you're grilling, and you open up the grill and it's got a little bit of fire in it, and you like singes all the arms, to scent the hair off your arms. It doesn't take a lot of fire to singe you, right?
Just a little heat.
Yep. Not a hair was singed. There was no smoke. Not even the smell of smoke. Okay, what else? What else strikes you about it?
Well, even before they were thrown into the box, and King Nebuchadnezzar asked them about their God saving them, and they said, "We don't have to answer you on that matter. But if he chooses to do so, he'll do so. But if he doesn't choose to do so, we're still not going to bow down."
Yeah, isn't that an amazing statement of faith?
Yes.
That's probably the big message out of the middle of this, is that statement of faith. That doesn't matter what you do to us, King, and it doesn't matter if God rescues us or not. We're still not going to do it. Now, a couple of little bits and pieces. How many times does it says the God that King Nebuchadnezzar set up?
Yeah.
You know, this is so obviously a man-made thing, right? He sets up this image and he says, "Everybody bow down to this. Everybody worship." How many times does it say all the different officers and all the administrators? So I have a question for you. Where's Daniel? It says all the administrators and everything else, right? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were there. Where was Daniel? Wasn't he one of the chief administrators of the province of Babylon? Wasn't he one of the leaders over all the soothsayers and magicians and wise men?
Maybe he was out of town.
That's a really good answer, Art, because that's probably what it was. The point is, this is one of those things that people who want to deny the inspiration of the scriptures, in particular Daniel, this is what they will argue. They say, "Hold it, I thought Daniel was the head of all these guys. Why isn't he there? I mean, if he, you know," and they go, "Surely, well, does that mean he bowed down? You know, so they were only getting after Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego?" Of course not.
That goes back to one of Gilbert's favorite scriptures.
Uh-huh.
The secret things.
The secret things belong to God. Yeah. And, you know, it's perfectly reasonable if Daniel was one of the chief governors that he might be out of town, right? You need to go negotiate a treaty with another country. You need to go assure something happened. You know, people do that all the time, right? Our leaders are out of town a lot. So that's probably what happened. And just to not spend, you know, lots more time on this, there is a vision that happens in this. It's a vision, a live vision. It's not a vision in the night or a vision in sleep. What's the vision?
Kingsley's the fourth man.
Yeah, the fourth man. Who's the fourth man? Now, depending on your translation, Nebuchadnezzar either says, "This looks like the Son of God or one of the sons of God." And then notice right afterwards he says, "An angel came." Okay? So, first of all, don't you know, we shouldn't jump to conclusions that says, "Oh, this is Jesus," because it says the Son of God. First of all, how would Nebuchadnezzar know? This is Nebuchadnezzar, what Nebuchadnezzar said, a pagan king. How would he know it was the Son of God? Right? Jesus, in other words. He wouldn't. But, what made him think that this person was special? Why didn't he say, "Look at there, there's four men in there walking around. Y'all see those four? I count four, don't you?"
He wasn't thrown into the fiery furnace.
He wasn't thrown in, but why would he look at four beings walking around man-like beings and declare that three of them, okay, I know who they are, I can see them and I know who they what they look like. And this guy is completely different. He looks like the son of the gods. Now, what was their view of gods? When they could afford it, what did they make a god out of?
Gold.
Shiny metal, right? How many times have we heard descriptions of angelic beings and in some cases, and we're also going to find in other places, descriptions of God, and we'll see Jesus in Revelation. How are they described? Bright, looking like burning brass or molten metal, shining bright, right? So we don't have the description, but it is entirely possible, given that that's the common description of these beings, that that's what Nebuchadnezzar saw. Because he says, that's really different. That doesn't look like anything we've seen before. It's a man-like being, but it sure isn't just a regular guy. And of course, this being is not there when they come out of the fire. Okay, so let's move on to chapter 4, which gets to the dream and the interpretation thereof, which is the purpose of our class.
Sam, did you,
yes.
Did you touch on what it said, the fire consumed the man that took them?
Right, right. So first of all, he said he had them bound and tied up. He had his mighty men. So these would be the strongest, biggest, baddest guys in his army, right? His mighty men bound them up, tied them up, threw them in the fire. By the way, one thing did burn in the fire. What was it? The rope. Because it said they were walking around. It says these guys had to throw them into the fire. Now the only way you're going to get a fire, now we talked about the tanner, remember the fire pot in Abraham's dream? We talked about the difference in the language between cooking furnaces and melting furnaces, you know, where they would like melt metal. This was probably a furnace that had a serious airflow and chimney attached, so it could superheat itself. You know, you ever seen or heard of a chimney fire? Right? If you catch the soot and stuff and tar and the chimney on fire, it will heat up so hot that it will you know, you could easily melt metal. It's like a jet engine going off. The reason is the convection sucks the air into it and the oxygen superheats, just like you're blowing on a coal, right? The coal gets brighter. So more than likely this is one of those setups. It was a setup where it had an airflow and a chimney, and it could get a lot of air blowing in it to heat it up. So they throw lots of fuel into it. It gets really, really hot. And then these guys have to carry and throw a full-size man into this fire. If they're going to carry and throw him into the fire, how close do they have to get?
Real close.
They can't chuck him 10 feet, right? They've got to carry him and heave them into the fire. If they're at the edge of the fire and they're heaving into the fire, what are they doing? One, they're breathing. Superheated air, and they're carrying a full-size man. Superheated air, one good breath of superheated air, fried your lungs. That's all it takes. So all they'd have to do is take one big puff of that superheated air and they'd be gone. So that's probably what happened.
It also takes more than just a little fire. It takes more than just pouring gas on a human body to burn it up. It takes tremendous heat.
There's a lot of heat.
That's the reason a crematory is what it is.
Yep. And so, you know, yeah, that's probably what happened. Doesn't say, it just says that they were told to throw them in the fire, but we can use logic to say they had to throw them, they had to be closed, it was superheated, they got a lung full of superheated air, that's probably what killed them. Not that God couldn't have killed them any other way he wanted, but that's at least a reasonable explanation.
You mentioned something about it being certain amount of times hotter than...
Yeah, seven times hotter. So it was really superheated. Okay, chapter 4. Now, I'm going to read the part about the up to the vision, up to the interpretation first. Nebuchadnezzar the king, to all peoples, nations, languages that dwell on the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I thought it was good to declare the signs and wonders that the Most High God has worked for me. How great are his signs and how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house and flourishing in my palace, and I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts of my bed and the visions in my head troubled me. Therefore I issued a decree to bring all the wise men of Babylon before me, that they might make known to me the interpretation of the dream. Then the magicians, the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers came in, and I told them the dream, but they did not make known to me its interpretation. But at last Daniel came before me. His name is Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God. In him is the spirit of the holy God. And I told this dream before him, saying, Belteshazzar, chief of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy God is in you and no secret troubles you, explain to me the visions of my dream which I have seen and its interpretation. And these were the visions of my head while on my bed. I was looking, and behold, a tree in the midst of the earth, and its height was great. And the tree grew and became strong, and it reached to the heavens, and it could be seen to the ends of all the earth. Its leaves were lovely, and its fruit abundant, and in it were fruit, was food for all. The beasts of the field found shade under it, and the birds of the heavens dwelt in its branches, and all flesh was fed from it. I saw in the visions of my head while on my bed, and there was a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven. He cried aloud and said thus, Chop down the tree and cut off its branches, strip off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Let the beasts get out from under it and the birds from its branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump and the roots in the earth, bound it with a band of iron and bronze, but in the tender grass of the field. Let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let him graze with the beasts on the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from that of a man, and let him be given the heart of a beast till seven times pass over him. This decision is by the decree of the watchers, and the sentence by the word of the holy ones, in order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and gives it to whomever he will, and sets it over the lowest of men. This dream I, Nebuchadnezzar, have seen. Now you, Belteshazzar, declare its interpretation, since all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known to me the interpretation, but you are able, because the Spirit of the Holy God is in you. Okay, the first thing to notice is this is a proclamation by King Nebuchadnezzar. It says, I, Nebuchadnezzar, did this. This is him writing, okay? This is actually in Chaldean. Daniel has several differences. I think it's Syriac, Aramaic, and Chaldean are the languages used in Daniel. And this is Chaldean. This is the language of the Babylonians. This is a copy of the letter that Nebuchadnezzar sent out. He said, I'm going to tell you this story. This whole chapter is Nebuchadnezzar's version of what happened. Okay, so it's context. It's something to keep in mind. Now, he says, I had this dream. I called all the other guys together. They couldn't help, so I finally called Daniel. Now, the first question is, what happened the last time he had a troubling dream? It was last week's lesson. Remember the great image? And he called and he said,
people couldn't answer him. He had them killed.
He was getting ready to have them all killed. And finally, Daniel wasn't even asked the first time. He comes around and says, hey, we can answer. You know, I can answer it. And God blesses him and he's able to answer the dream. Why didn't Nebuchadnezzar just not go to Daniel first? It's a good question. First of all, we don't really have a clear picture of how long a time span this is between the first case and this case. It doesn't say directly. This is the last part of this is the only last part of Nebuchadnezzar's account in the book of Daniel. Right next, it starts up into Belshazzar, who's his son / adopted grandson. And so, first of all, we've been watching the development of King Nebuchadnezzar and his belief in God. When he introduces Daniel here, when he talks about Daniel, remember, this is his proclamation to all the people. He says, and I call Daniel, the Spirit of the Holy God is in him. He knows that from the first time, right? But what does he call him still? He does name him Daniel. But then he says, whose name is Belteshazzar, after the name of my God.
In the King James Version, it does not translate, he believes he's of the holy God, but of the holy gods.
Yeah.
So, Nebuchadnezzar, he's not a believer in the true God of heaven. He's just a believer of gods. And there are some gods that are obviously more powerful than the ones that he's most associated with in his own mind. And Daniel's God, he just, hey, one God's good as another. And let's see what you can do with this.
Except he knows that Daniel's God is special. Well, but Daniel, not the only God.
But Daniel, he was one of the holy gods.
Right. He's obviously one of the higher gods that's got a lot of power. But what did Nebuchadnezzar do in between the first vision and this one? He set up an image. And he says, here's a God. Everybody bow down to the God, right? That's why I went ahead and read the previous chapter. And here he says, so now Daniel who's named after my God, but the spirit of the holy gods is in him. You know, we still have a very confused individual here, right? He believes in God. He, you know, remember what he said after, first of all, he said it after the first vision. He said, the God of Daniel is a great God. Now, what did he say after Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the furnace episode? Let nobody say anything bad about this God, because nobody can do what this God can do, right? So he's growing. God has given him a series of lessons in who he is. Now, what did Daniel say way back in the beginning? The whole purpose of the book? God sets up kings and he takes down kings. God is in control, period. So Nebuchadnezzar is getting a series of lessons about this, and he's about to get the biggest lesson of his whole life. So here's this dream. What's the dream? Huge tree. Lots of leaves and branches, lots of fruit. All the birds of the air live in the branches. All the animals of the earth rest under the shade. There's food for all. It's a glorious tree. The tree's so huge it can be seen from the ends of the earth. Now, how many times have we seen in visions already images of trees? Quite often, right? You remember in Ezekiel? We talked about the tree that represented the nation of Israel, and the top branches, the eagle came and plucked off the top branches of the tree and took them to a different place and planted them, and they flourished. That whole discussion?
Oh, yes.
You know? We've had a couple of different times where trees have been used. Sometimes they've been used to represent nations. Sometimes they've been used to represent kings. Or kingdoms. So, and of course we're going to see this again when we get... Oh, sometimes they just represent trees. That's an important point. For instance, in Ezekiel, do you remember the description of the new temple? And the river that flowed out of the temple? And the trees that were growing on either side of the river? The trees that bore all kinds of different fruit, and the leaves were used for medicine, and the fruit was there was fruit every month for 12 months. And we said that's the same kind of picture you get in Revelation. So sometimes trees are just trees. The point here is, in these visionary things, you got to look at the context. And in this case, we get a big clue. Notice he says, the watcher, it's interesting, this is the only place in the scripture that angels are called watchers. It's just an interesting little tidbit. The watcher comes and the watcher calls out and says, chop down the tree, scatter its fruit, scatter its branches, let all the animals get away, but bind the stump of it with iron and brass. Okay? Now it's interesting. We're going to get when we get to the interpretation, but the notice here is that the stump is... Yeah, go ahead.
If you put... metal over a tree, then it can't send out sprouts.
That's true, but it's also protected. And so the idea here, and of course we're going to find out later, is that this is protected, and in fact it's going to be allowed to regrow. Now, the other thing, did you notice the switch in tense? Right in verse 15. Nevertheless, leave the stump and its roots bound with a band of iron and bronze. In the tender grass of the field, let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let him graze with the beasts of the grass of the earth, and let his heart be changed from that of a man. Let him be given the heart of a beast, till seven times pass over him. All of a sudden, we're not talking about a tree anymore, we're talking about a him. Okay? And when we get to the interpretation, it becomes clear what's being talked about here. Okay, now, let's keep going. Verse 19. Then Daniel, whose name is Belteshazzar, was astonished for a time, and his thoughts troubled him. So the king spoke and said, Belteshazzar, do not let the dream or its interpretation trouble you. Belteshazzar answered and said, my lord, may the dream concern those who hate you, and its interpretation concern your enemies. The tree that you saw, which grew and became strong, whose height reached to the heavens, and which could be seen by all the earth, whose leaves were lovely and its fruit abundant, in which was food for all, under which the beasts of the field dwelt, and in those branches the birds of the heaven had their home. It is you, O king, who have grown and become strong. For your greatness has grown and reached the heavens, and your dominion to the end of the earth. And inasmuch as the king saw a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven, and saying, chop down the tree and destroy it, but leave its stump and roots in the earth, bound with a band of iron and bronze and the tender grass of the field, let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let him graze with the beasts of the field till seven times pass over him. This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord the king. They shall drive you from men. Your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make you eat grass like oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over you, till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and gives it to whomever he chooses. And inasmuch as they have commanded to leave the stump and roots of the tree, your kingdom shall be assured to you after you come to know that heaven rules. Therefore, O king, let my advice be acceptable to you. Break off your sins by being righteous, and your iniquities by showing mercy to the poor. Perhaps there may be a lengthening of your prosperity. Okay, all this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar. At the end of the 12 months, he was walking in the royal palace of Babylon. The king spoke, saying, "Is not this great Babylon, which I have built with a royal dwelling for my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty?" While the word was still in the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven. "King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken. The kingdom has departed from you, and they shall drive you from men, and your dwelling place shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make you eat grass like oxen, until seven times pass over you, until you know that the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses." That very hour the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men and ate grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. Okay, we'll stop there. So here's the interpretation. The tree is Nebuchadnezzar and his reign. Right? The tree is cut down, but it's protected. And then seven times happen. We're going to talk about that in a minute. Then the interpretation that Daniel says, first he says, "O king, I wish this was about your enemies and not about you." That's what it says when it says, "May this be to your enemies." Because he sees what's going to happen. He says, "King, I wish this was about your enemies, but it's not. It's about you." And what did he tell him to do? What did Daniel tell him to do at the end? He said, "King, if you'll repent, stop your sins, and do good, perhaps your prosperity will be lengthened." Now that's a really interesting point. It's a minor, it's a tiny little line in there. But what did, you know, Daniel, we're going to find out later when Daniel's praying in the latter part of the book. Daniel one time spends 3 weeks praying and fasting. You know what he's praying? "Forgive my sins and the sin of my people." He was in active repentance all the time. And so he's telling the king, "His king, if you'll just repent, maybe this won't happen to you, or at least maybe it'll be delayed." So what happened to Nebuchadnezzar? 12 months later, notice. So after this, he forgets. 12 months later, he's walking around in his palace. And remember, Babylon is the center of the known world at that time. The richest place. We have some ancient records that talk about the Hanging Gardens of Babylon as one of the seven wonders of the world. It's just an amazing place. So here's the king Nebuchadnezzar walking around on the palace one day with his pride about the bust. And what's he saying? "Oh, look at great Babylon. Look what I've done by my power, for my glory, because of my great majesty." Is he just completely full of himself? Okay. We know this because we've had numerous studies on this. The very first classification of sin, well, not the very first. John gives us three major categories of sin. What are they? The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. And we've studied before that actually you see that in the garden, right? When Eve first takes the fruit, she does all three of those. You know, what do we got here?
The pride of life.
The pride of life, right. And in the context of God is in control, the king is sent to go, "Oh, look at all I've done for myself because of my great glory and majesty." And God says, not. "I'm going to remind you of something. Who's really in control?" How many times does it say there that you will know that God is in control of the kingdoms of men and sets them up whoever he chooses? So I'm going to teach you. Now, what if Nebuchadnezzar had just been struck down? He's obviously struck with some sort of malady, right? He basically says, "Take out his man's heart, give him a beast's heart." In other words, he's crazy. He's crazy. They drive him out into the fields. He eats grass like an ox. And it says, until his hair grows as long as eagle's feathers and his fingernails grow as long as bird's claws. We're going to talk about that in a minute because that's significant when you try to understand the temporal aspects. This guy is turned into a monster. Now, what's the likelihood that if God wasn't involved, that these folks would have just kind of said, okay, he's crazy. Next, who wants to be king? Right? Probably so, right? And especially when you look at how long this actually happened. We'll talk about that in a second. But God protected his kingdom. So God took him down off his high horse, but protected his kingdom until he looks up to heaven and acknowledges that God's in control. And then God puts him back. You see, this is just the strongest evidence that could be that God's in control. He takes the most powerful person in the world, makes him crazy, but holds his kingdom, waits, and says, I'll hold the kingdom for you. And then when you finally acknowledge that I'm in control, I'll put you back. Which just wouldn't happen in normal life. It just wouldn't happen at all. So it's a clear example. Now, verse 34. And at the end of the time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my understanding returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He does according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. No one can restrain his hand or say to him, what have you done? At that same time, my reason returned to me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my honor and splendor returned to me. My counselors and nobles resorted to me. I was restored to my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added to me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all of whose works are truth and his ways justice, and those who walk in pride he is able to put down. Isn't that amazing testimony? From Nebuchadnezzar, this is who's saying it. So, a couple things. And it says, in the prophecy, in the dream, it says, this will happen to you until seven times pass over you. How long is a time? Well, first of all, it doesn't tell us directly, does it? Now, this is language. I looked up everywhere the word times shows up in the scripture. I looked at every example.
I can only guess,
what?
But probably maybe a year.
Well, that's a really good guess, Art, and I'll show you some evidence for that here in a minute. There's another place in the Bible where this notion of talking about times occurs. Where is it? It's in the book of Revelation. Remember times, and half a time? And all that discussion in the book of Revelation? Okay, so, first of all, it says seven times. So it's seven of something, whatever it happens to be. It's seven of something. So it's a time period, obviously. So what could be examples of time periods that you might have seven of?
7 months.
Could be years.
7 days.
7 years. Right, 7 days. Seven months.
7 new moons.
Seven lunar cycles, right? Seven seasons. You know, these are things that the people there would have measured time by. Okay? They didn't have clocks to measure minutes. So let's take a couple of examples. So what if this happened just 7 days? What if this was 7 days? So he goes crazy for 7 days and then he's back. Now that would be a little easier to understand because the kingdom, you know, they'd say, hey, he's just sick, he'll get okay, you know, and a week later he's fine. So that would kind of fit that, but what does it not fit?
The length of the fingernails and hair.
Right. So let's take like 7 weeks. Got the same problem. 7 months? Well, let's see. How fast does hair and fingernails grow? This was the question. So I went and looked it up. It was kind of a fascinating answer. Turns out that human hair...
It depends on whether you talk about a male or female.
Well, to a degree. And it also depends on, you know, your age and your nutrition and your genetics. Some people's hair grows faster than others. But on average, human hair grows at a rate of 6 inches a year. On average. Okay? So we got 6 inches a year. And nails grow at 1.4 inches a year. So these are the nails. Now some grow faster than others. I mean, this is an average, right? Okay. Now, So the question is, what measurement are we given in the scripture?
The hair is about the length of an eagle. Depending on type of the eagle is, some eagles' wings are about 7 feet long.
You're actually almost precise. On average, you're precisely right, aren't you? I'm amazed, because I was looking that up this morning. So the eagle is a measuring stick. Now, there are different species of eagle. Some are much larger than others. We think here in the U.S., we think of the great, the bald eagle. Over in that part of the world, there's an eagle called the harpy eagle, which is even bigger. But in general, an eagle's wingspan is 7 feet. If it's 7 feet is the wingspan, how long is one wing? Roughly. 3.5 feet. Okay, if hair grows 6 inches a year, how many years is it going to take for hair to get as long as an eagle's wing? 7 years. Isn't that amazing? I think maybe God knew what he was talking about. The other thing was nails. So human nails grow. Now granted, our fingernails, if you didn't cut your fingernails, they'd get worn down and broken and various other things, right? But in general, the harpy eagle, this really large eagle, has a talon that is 5 inches long. Okay? Now, if you look at this and you say 1 inch a year, you got 5 inches long for the harpy eagle. Well, okay, in 7 years, let's see, if we did seven times that, it would be more than that. It would be 9.8, roughly 10, or in that range, roughly 10 inches. You figure some wear and tear. The nails are getting worn off in 7 years. 5-inch nails is in a reasonable range. That his hand, now notice it says this is how he looked. He looked as if his hair was as long as eagle's feathers and his nails like claws. If I had another talon out here as long as my finger, that's about what it would look like. So the interesting point is here is roughly, this tells us it's roughly in a period of about 7 years. It's not months. It can't be months. Could be, seasons. It's still not long enough. So very likely we're talking about time equals 1 year, at least in this prophecy. Okay? So seven times would be 7 years. Now, this is just logic on our part. It doesn't say that a time equals a year. Okay? But what does it tell us? This guy was crazy for 7 years.
It took a good while.
A long time.
Yes.
A long time. And that God protected his kingdom. Don't you think there were other people in the kingdom who would think, hey, the king's crazy, I'm going to take over? In 7 years? Of course there would have been. God protected his kingdom. And then, this is very much like the prodigal son. Remember what happened with the prodigal son? Prodigal son leaves, goes off, spends all his inheritance, ends up where? With the pigs. Yeah, a Jewish boy, young Jewish man, living with pigs. The worst you could imagine being. And wishing that he could eat what they were eating, even. He was so hungry. And then what does it say? When I came to myself, when he came to his senses, he said, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go back home. I'm going to beg forgiveness of my father. And this is basically what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. He says, I looked up and I acknowledged that God is in control. Now, look at the result.
All of this is in a letter to all the people of the...
Yeah, the entire world. I mean, effectively, his entire realm, which is the effectively the known world.
Written by Nebuchadnezzar.
And notice it says, verse 34, it reinforces that. At the end of the time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, this is written in first person. Notice what he says. I bless the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. His dominion is an everlasting dominion. His kingdom is from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He does according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of earth. No one can restrain his hand or say to him, what have you done? Man, that sounds like Psalms, doesn't it? You think maybe he finally got the message? Did it take a hard lesson? Okay. Notice what he says, though. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. Remember, I mentioned this last time. We obviously have discussion in the New Testament about the kingdom of Christ, the kingdom being the church, and all those things, right? The establishment of the kingdom and the establishment of the church. But Nebuchadnezzar here is saying that his kingdom and his dominion, the area that he dominates, in other words, rules over, is everlasting. Here, hundreds of years before Jesus, he's saying the kingdom is already here and it's already everlasting. Now, we talk about this a little bit. We'll talk about it more when we get into some of the New Testament. This isn't a contradiction that Christ's kingdom is different. All it's saying is that God is in control. He is king over his creation, period. And notice what he says. This kingdom lasts from generation to generation. Where did we hear that? Remember last week? The image with the gold, right? The arms and chest of silver, the belly and thighs of bronze, the legs of iron, and the feet of iron and clay. And Daniel explains it. He says, these are kingdoms. They're empires, basically. The first one is you, Babylonian. The next one is going to be the Medes and Persians. The next one is going to be the Greeks. The next one is going to be the Romans. And the Romans are going to fall. And the Romans are going to fall to what? What hits the great statue and destroys it?
A stone.
A stone cut out without hands, which means it's an act of God. And then it says, and that stone will grow into a great mountain, and that kingdom shall never be given over to another. An everlasting kingdom. You see, he's remembering this stuff, and he's saying, I understand. My kingdom is only here because God put me here. And he proved to me very painfully, over 7 years, thereabouts, that he's in absolute control of the kingdoms of men. And his kingdom is everlasting. So, this is the last we hear of Nebuchadnezzar. We're going to hear one more reference to Nebuchadnezzar in the next chapter. And the reference is, your father, he's talking to Belshazzar, right, with the writing on the wall, we're going to get to that. His wife says, your father knew this guy named Daniel. And your father, and when Daniel talks to Belshazzar, he says, you knew all these things. It's not like you hadn't heard. These were international proclamations. These were in the annals of the kings of Babylon. He said, you knew this. You knew what Nebuchadnezzar thought about God. And yet, as we're going to find out, he's throwing a big drunken feast, thousands of his nobles, and he says, you know what? I'm a little tired of these glasses we have here. Why don't you go to the treasury and pull out those dishes, gold dishes and stuff? I think we ought to have a real party. Let's go get the gold dishes and things from the temple of Jehovah God in Israel. The one, you know, the one that my father took over? Go get those and let's drink out of those. And then a hand writes on the wall. And that very night, his life is taken and the kingdom is given to another. Same lesson, different time. Any comments? We'll stop there. Yeah.
As you say, Nebuchadnezzar, his resistance to understand that God's in control, and then you review all kings and kingdoms and those that empower since him, it's a repeating kind of thing. They can't learn the lesson. They still can't learn the lesson that God's in control, not us, but He learned his lesson finally.
Yeah.
What's it going to take for us to learn the lesson?
Mm-hmm. Even as Christians, how often do you worry about things when, if you stop for a second and realize that God was really in control?
The thing that he said there at the beginning about God sets up kings and brings down kings. The same thing is said in the New Testament by Paul when he said the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords.
Yep.
He's still the ruler of all.
Yep.
And I know I get upset with the way politics go and seem like that the good suffer and the evil prosper, but in the end God's in control.
Well, and we've talked about this before in other lessons. God is in control. Does he allow wickedness to happen on this earth?
Yes.
Yes, he does. for his own purpose and will. He calls one nation, pagan nation like Assyria. Remember in Isaiah, when we studied Isaiah, he says, I'm going to whistle for Assyria, and I'm going to snap my fingers for Egypt, and I'm going to have them come and do my will, take out the nation of Israel.
All things work as legit.
So God is in control, and he will use even wicked nations and pagan people to accomplish his will.
If I remember right, the stone hit the foot, which you said was the Romans.
Yeah.
And when it broke, it shattered the other ones.
Mm-hmm. It all turned to dust and blew away. And none of those kingdoms are alive today. All right, we'll stop there.